Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 103 of the Panelcast. This is AJ, as usual, and with me is Martin.
Hi, guys.
And Vanessa.
Hello.
What are we doing out here, guys?
We are waiting to get into the theater for Dread 3D.
Ooh, Dread 3D. Yes, we're here in Riverside at the AMC Theater, getting ready to watch Dread 3D. We got our special little Dread 3D glasses, which were kind of a letdown. What do you think?
Yeah, you're slapping the name of something on the side of a regular pair of 3D glasses. I'm happy we didn't pay extra for them, you know.
So they got lazy with it or something. Everyone else was saying we should have got a helmet, but I think that would have been too much. In this episode, we're going to go over a couple of news stories and tell you what's been going on. We're also going to prep up and get you guys all excited for the second annual Inland Empire Zombie Beauty Pageant, which is coming up. Martin is going to be talking a little bit about Kamikaze and how we enjoyed his weekend while I was slaving away at work, a little asshole. And I'm sure Vanessa will be tagging in with her little quips every now and then, too.
Yep.
All that and more as we sit down and get prepared to watch Dread in 3D.
Hi, this is Justin White of Necrosapien Press and artist of ZKS, the Zombie Kill Squad, and you should come check out ForbiddenPanel.com for all your latest geek needs.
And we're back. There really wasn't much to talk about in the news that came out this week, except for Kamikaze. It seemed to hog up all the stories, and luckily we had somebody there. Martin, why don't you tell us about your experiences at Kamikaze?
Kamikaze was in its second year. This year, Stan Lee is the official MC guy of the show, and they were having him take the main stage to host special events and special panels that he brings his friends up and talk to them about, which was kind of cool. I was at the first Kamikaze last year. It was small, crowded, and there were some small hiccups that they had to deal with and learn from, and they worked hard to fix those this year and brought a bigger show this year. More panels. They put the panels in a different room from the exhibit hall. They expanded the exhibit hall. They added different packages for tickets and things like that. So the show overall got bigger. I wouldn't necessarily say better. There were some improvements, but nothing that actually made it like a Comic-Con, a bigger Comic-Con. So we'll see where that goes from there. The only things really to report from there were Stan Lee really talking. Stan Lee's got a bunch of projects going on right now. He's working with his YouTube channel to make the World of Heroes reserved places. Things like he's got an unconventional show where these two guys go around to cons and cover what it's like to be at that con. Funny enough, they weren't at Kamikaze. And he also has a show that's going to be coming, a TV series itself called The Mighty Seven, which is a book he had done in the past and worked with in the past. And then his other hinting was Thor 2. He already knows what his cameo is, and he also wished he could tell the audience what it was, and that turned out to be one of the biggest announcements of the whole weekend. So lots going on with Stan Lee, and for it being a Stan Lee show, obviously about Stan Lee. Elvira was the other big guest for the show for the weekend, and she announced that there is going to be a new comic book coming out featuring Elvira, the character, but there wasn't much more in detail on what that was going to be about, and we'll see it next year. Other than that, we attended a couple panels. One was the Comic Book Live group, which does an improv show dressed as superhero characters. This time around, they were doing Avengers.
That was
and
hilarious.
Vanessa tagged along with me, and would you like to chime in on that?
Yeah, I thought it was the improv was genuine, and everyone seemed to be having a really good time with it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It wasn't what I expected, but it was definitely worth sitting down and watching.
Yeah, and Comic Book Live does a monthly show at the IO Improv in Los Angeles. And it's not that they're out there in superhero costumes. They don't go by these huge professional costumes. They make their own costumes, but they did have the Avengers costumes down pretty well. You knew what each character was, and they were making references and jokes and one-liners about the Avengers movie and the Avengers comic book. So if you're a nerd and you know the stories, you get a kick out of it. If you're not this big, huge fandom nerd of Avengers, you got a kick out of it. So it was cool. And it was one of the few panels that was actually comic book related. There were a lot of panels that were more fan discussions. Ooh, I like Firefly, so I want to host a panel for an hour talking about Firefly and doing a Q&A with other fans. Doctor Who, and things like that. There was a cosplay one, a steampunk one, things like that. It was more just fan discussion, fans talking to other fans about stuff. Every once in a while they would have an expert costumer or something in there to talk about the show. And then the rest of the panels were mostly screenings, movie screenings. There were a lot of independent films at Kamikaze, and they were actually the most prominent in terms of promoting their product. Everywhere we went in the exhibit hall floor, we were getting postcards for some movie, and then they were trying to talk us into coming to their panels and coming to see their movie. Vanessa, do you want to talk about some of the movies we saw?
Yeah, can you distract yourself from your iPhone?
Whoa, this is your guys' deal. The movie's what, Hush Up? Dust Up.
Dust Up.
Dust Up. I really can't talk about that one other than you need to see it, and when a certain scene comes up, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. You are welcome.
Yeah, Dust Up was this film that was promoted all weekend, and the only thing I knew about it was one of the guys wears an eye patch. And so going into it, guy wears an eye patch, cool. As time went on and we learned more about the film, we learned that there were other characters. Amber Benson from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV show is one of the main stars in the movie, which was a big draw for fans. And so sitting down to watch the movie was cool, and then you get in there, and it's actually a modern-day story of a war veteran living out in the desert. His best pal lives in a teepee off the land.
Dressed like an Indian.
And yeah, dressed like an Indian. And they have to take on a drug dealer who runs this little desert town. And it's graphic. There were tears. There was laughing. And there were other bodily fluids involved. It was entertaining.
Bodily fluids.
But independent film, and made for a small budget, which was really impressive with what they did. The makeup, the effects, and the things that they did with it. And then they put a lot of effort into the soundtrack, and they're promoting that a lot. When they release this film on iTunes, they're also going to release the soundtrack for it at the same time. So it was kind of cool to see an independent film that's going to have this big push for a soundtrack as well. And they're taking it to festivals, and they'll have it at screenings for the coming year. It'll be available digitally next month, though. And it was fun to sit there and wait in line and hear all the other fans excited to see it. And then to see the stars and the director there who were excited to have the fans there in the room with them and talk about it. It was really cool. And they were taking pictures with people. You could walk right up to Amber Benson. She was hugging people and putting on eye patches. And there was face painting at one point in time.
They're extremely excited just to share it. And so it made it feel like you really were invited to watch something that they really cherished.
Yeah.
So were you like my teen sexy romance? Kind
of
like that?
A little bit. In terms of my Sucky Teen Romance, you saw a lot of excitement and passion from them doing it, but this film felt like they were all involved in promoting it. They all wanted to go to every single screen. They all wanted to be walking the exhibit hall floor to promote this. They're all wearing the t-shirts. They're all on Facebook and Twitter promoting it together and cross-promoting it with each other. It was like the team, the whole cast, the team.
A bunch of friends making a really good
making
movie.
A movie, and they're pushing it. And to me, you never see that with a big Hollywood film. Yeah, we get those big budget marketing campaigns or a viral campaign, but this was actually a group, and if you go to their Facebook page, it's facebook.com/dustupfilm, there's my plug, they do a lot of
I'm wearing my eye patch right now.
Promoting and things like that for it, and they're sending out information. They have a Kickstarter going to help them get more screens, help bring it out on DVD and projects like that. And so they're continuously working on this movie, even though it's already done, it's been edited, it's been cut, and it's been shown to people. And so they're still working really hard to do it. And that kind of energy behind it and enthusiasm made it even more fun to experience. And it's a movie that you wouldn't normally expect to see. You're not going to see a big Hollywood premiere for this one, which is sad. But the director, Ward Roberts, was saying he wants this to be one of those midnight movie cult classics. Like people go and dress up as the characters.
Like Evil Dead, Rocky Horror.
Yeah, something like that. And Evil Dead is actually a good comparison for it. It's not a horror film. It's not meant to be a horror film. But there is gore in it, and there is graphicness. And they bring it into a story that plays well and transitions well. It was impressive. Not what I was expecting to see at a Kamikaze event. And for the rest of the weekend, most of it was promoting other movies. There was a movie called Sushi Girl.
Sushi Girl, awesome, love it.
Vanessa was really excited about the movies we went to this weekend, if you can't tell. So they did a lot of promoting. They were passing out chopsticks with Sushi Girl on it. But they had Mark Hamill's one of the key stars in it, who plays a character that you never see Mark Hamill at, but is perfect for it and hilarious, and he put a lot of effort into it.
The chopsticks. I got them from one of the cons of it.
Right. They've been promoting it for a while now, and it's going to be coming out on demand in November and then out on DVD, Blu-ray in January. So they're promoting their film. And then there was short films and other horror films that were promoting. They were all part of Elvira's Horror Hunt Contest, which was a separate event.
Oh, dang.
But they also promoted it at Kamikaze. And we came out, we watched four movies over the course of the weekend, right?
Vanessa? Yes,
uh-huh. Yeah. And they, I mean, that's what stuck the most in my head from this weekend was that there were movies. It was independent movies. It was not very comic book heavy to me, which was kind of disappointing. And there were other issues like lines. They had problems with registration lines. The CEO got into a fight with the fire marshals at one point in time because they were having to have so many people wait outside in the heat, which she deserves kudos for fighting for the fans. But at the same time, the fans still ended up waiting outside for hours on end. There were issues with people who hadn't bought badges walking right up and getting their tickets and walking in versus pre-regs having to wait hours to get into the show. Things like that, which were a little disappointing. But they, Kamikaze, again, is still in their growing time. You know, this was their second year. Third time's a charm, hopefully. Maybe next year registration will go perfectly. And I'm sure the show will grow more next year. The thing I would like to see more is more publishers. Even if it is the big DC Marvel guys showing up or the small guys showing up, the independent comic books, I think there needs to be more of a comic book presence from those publishers, and they need to be hosting panels at this show to help. I mean, it's Kamikaze. It wasn't pop culture event. It wasn't movie event. It was, let's have Kamikaze. And that was one of the things that was absent from the show. Vanessa, is there anything you want to add about the weekend?
The movie shorts that we saw, Other. It was kind of cut short, but the intro was really interesting. And then the first movie that we saw,
Found,
yeah. That one was incredible. It's twisted. You know, these movies, I mean, I don't know if this is going to sound right, but they're almost like poetic, the way the scenes are shot and how short it is, and it's choppy. And then at the end, it just blows you away, and you're kind of just sitting there in silence like, did that just happen? And I don't know, that was awesome for me because I like movies.
So basically, Kamikaze Expo, to sum it up, was about movies. If you can, go check out Other, Found, Dust Up, and Sushi Girl when you get a chance.
Sushi Girl. Woo-woo.
And, yeah, that's all that I have to say about Kamikaze.
Well, it sounds like, from everything you're saying, it was indeed, had nothing to do with comic books all that much. So it sounds like maybe they're starting where San Diego is now with the pop culture event. Now, in your opinion, do you think that maybe it's because they couldn't get a lot of comic book publishers out there?
That's what I was wondering.
And that's what it is?
Yeah, I was wondering. There was two small independent publishers that I talked to who were present, but the booths that were around them were outdoing them. And the movie booths were outdoing them. And Stan Lee on stage was outdoing them. Stan Lee is a comic book god, and yet there wasn't a heavy comic book presence at this show. Aspen Comics had a large horror booth with several of their comic book talent there. Almost basically absent from the rooms, from main stage stuff. There wasn't a lot of focus on any of that either. And so maybe Aspen wasn't pushing it enough or something. I don't know what it was in terms of the organizational side of it, but it just didn't feel like there were comic books there at the show.
But see, like, I feel bad for the comic creators and stuff that were out during that show, but I also feel good because, like, maybe they want to do little smaller shows like mine where people will actually come out and see comic book people, you know?
Yeah, I could see, like, if Forbidden Panel was to show up at this, I would like to see Forbidden Panel artists, writers, the publishing editor, you know, all you up there on stage at a panel, hosting a panel, talking about what Forbidden Panel's publishing includes. And then another panel talks about doing your own publishing or independent publishing, things like that. There's several variations that an independent publishing company could do for a panel, and I didn't see those.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. So, but I give kudos to the staff. I think they worked hard, and it was a fun convention, and we should give it another chance next year.
Okay. Well, I think that'll do it for this segment. We're about to go into the movie, so as usual, we'll be talking about it during the credits scene. What? Real quick, we spent yesterday watching Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us did. Some of us fell asleep.
Yeah.
I was awake. I fell asleep during that Batman thing.
Whoa. You are not in this conversation anymore. I've now officially turned my back on Vanessa.
Can I go back to my phone?
Well, we just wanted to mention you were on an iPhone, you traitor.
No, joy for life.
We're outing Vanessa.
Oh.
So in prepping for this movie, watching Judge Dredd last night, are we all hoping that it's nothing like Judge Dredd?
The commercials for this Dredd movie are better than the Judge Dredd film as a whole.
It looks more serious, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for, that there isn't some sidekick character that kind of is filling the seriousness of it.
I think from the commercials, I feel like Carl Urban's overacting. Like he's trying to act past the mask, the helmet, And I'm worried that that's going to be throughout the entire movie.
But isn't that kind of how he is in all of his other roles? He's always, like, way bigger than what he actually is.
Well, not when he was in Bourne, in the Bourne movie.
Uh-huh.
And then when I saw him in Riddick, I didn't feel like he was acting.
Okay.
No, he wasn't acting past his costume. I think he's doing that because he's got the helmet. It's not showing his face. He has to project more.
Like a Bane thing? Like show emotion?
Kind of. Kind of more like, no, I'm still here. It's still me.
Okay.
Type of thing, like, because, you know.
I see what you're saying about, but I don't think it's the helmet. I think it's the idea of Judge Dredd. So there's this black cloud hanging over the idea, the character of Judge Dredd in a movie, that Sylvester Stallone just ruined it. He took his helmet off. He kissed Judge Hershey. He, you know, like, he does all this stuff in the movie. They tried to squeeze a little tidbit in of the comic book, but they really didn't with that Sylvester Stallone movie. So Carl Urban feels this responsibility, and he's been saying it since he got cast. I'm not going to take my mask off. I'm going to be hardcore. This is going to be tough. You know, this is going to be the Dredd you want to see. And so that kind of responsibility on his shoulders makes him maybe overreact or overact.
Okay, so moving on to the other thing that we saw was The Dark Knight Returns. Well, what did you guys think of that?
I'm going to step over here. This is
yeah,
where I
yeah,
play.
Excuse you.
Oh, okay. Bye-bye, iPhone user.
I think that the Dark Knight Returns is going to be one of the best DVDs we get from Warner Premiere. The voices were a little bit off to me. You and I talked about this a little bit last night, but it was the voices didn't seem to fit with the characters, especially from previous DVDs and things that they've done. The casting just seems off. It didn't fit the characters we wanted to see him. A 70-year-old Commissioner Gordon, how do you, you know, how, why does he sound like this?
Sounds like a teenager.
Right. So, and Batman even sounded weird. And you know, that doesn't work for the story. But the material, the look, it was, you phrased last night, I think you said it was a very heavy movie.
Yeah.
That's the perfect way to describe it. It's still one of the movies where you're just sitting there, and I didn't want to move. Like, I just sat there and stared at it all night. Whoa, when does part two come out?
Right.
Part, you know, splitting this thing into two parts is going to kill people.
But I liked it because I know that they split it into two parts because they fit everything that they could into one.
Right.
So we really didn't miss out on much in part one.
Right, which was one of the mistakes Warner Premiere made when they made the Doomsday Superman DVD.
That was horrible.
They cut out a whole bunch of pieces of story. All-Star Superman, they cut out a chapter of the story to make these animated movies. And so for this one, we're actually going to get that. And that was one of the things Bruce Timm said. He said he wanted to get that source material in there, and that's why they had to do two parts. So it's cool, but we've got to wait 6 months between each part.
I don't mind the wait, honestly. That movie was awesome.
Yeah.
Like you said, the animation was great. The action was great. The story was great. I felt involved with it from, like, the get-go. But, yeah, the voices just threw me. I mean, Peter Weller is Batman. I mean, I kept expecting him to quote RoboCop lines, you know, so that was my only bad thing. And Gordon's voice didn't fit him at all. It was too light. You know, it would be like me voicing, you know, a 90-year-old man. It just didn't work for me. So, but otherwise, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad enough to where it took me out of the movie.
Right. It didn't ruin the watching experience. You could tune into it, into the art and the look, and kind of drown out the voices. So it would work okay. And so it's definitely one of those ones that I'll watch again and again, I think. And I don't know about you, but I kind of want to go back and read the book now that I've seen the first half.
Yeah, I want to reread
see,
it.
Like,
yeah.
See how it looks. And then when we go into the second part of the story, see maybe if they're going to do anything different. You know, like, everyone's been talking about who, everyone wants to see the Superman-Batman fight.
Right.
And
Shazam.
Yeah. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it goes down to the second part, but to go back and read that first part and say, oh, man, so they really did get a lot of this material in there. It's one of those ones to buy it.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday. Definitely go out and
on Blu-ray, especially, because it just looked gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
What we saw.
Definitely go for the high-definition version.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're cool.
Yep.
So, yeah, we'll come back during the credits of Dredd.
Have dreams of world domination? You ever wanted to take on those pesky G.I. Joe jerk-offs, but really didn't know how to do that? Visit www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. This is Major Boca of Cobra asking you, telling you, to go to www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. That's Cobra3RDNightwatch.com.
So we're sitting here in the theater at the end of Judge Dredd. Martin, what are you thinking?
That was awesome. That was the way to end the summer of movies for 2012. I don't. That's what I can say for right now.
I thought the movie was awesome as well. I have a couple of issues I have with the movie, but we can just discuss that further after this part.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Gory as all hell.
And the manipulation of time, the whole time, all they kept seeing was how they progressed with time, how they slowed time. I mean, they played with time. They mind-fucked time.
Right.
The whole movie, which was cool, and it kept you going along with it.
Yeah, it was like playing Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack was phenomenal, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm going to go home and get it myself right now. real quick, what'd you think, Vanessa?
Completely different. It was missing something. The ending, I don't know what to say other than I want to hit a slow-mo.
Yeah, we're all going to hit that slow-mo.
That slow-mo was a nice touch on the film, too. More than people would expect, I think. Like, normally when you see a truck in a movie, it's like, oh, yeah, they're drug dealers, whatever. This was actually an effectual point within the movie that affected the whole movie, too.
Right, and almost delivering a poetic justice to how it was used.
Yeah.
In some ways, yeah. Visually, what do you think?
I liked it. I actually thought the 3D was going to be worthless. Like, it wasn't going to be, not to down to this, but the way they shot it was really cool. And there were a couple of shots, I don't know if you noticed, but it looked really grainy, which kind of goes with, the idea of the world, the megacity. But at the same time, the 3D still played through that, which looked awesome.
Right. Yeah, everything was very dirty, very sprawl.
Right.
Which I wanted to see was a sprawl, and I got that. Do you think, having seen the original last night, do you think those visuals and that city layout kind of, I don't know, changed your opinion on what to expect when you walked in? Like, I was shocked to see normal city layout and nothing really super high tech.
Right, they were talking about this being the world had been ruined by radiation, but we figured out a way to survive in an irradiated world, but we haven't created any sort of technological city for it. You know, there were cars on the streets and things like that. The motorcycles were just motorcycles with extra armor on it.
Right, and we didn't really see any motorcycle action.
But I was wondering, maybe, a post-apocalyptic idea kind of thing of maybe the technology was destroyed, the means to have that technology wasn't there. They just had the military-esque style building plating and armor plating that just was left over. They still needed time to advance.
True. It had a very hardware feel to it.
Yeah. It was a lot more, it's like a, I don't want to say old-fashioned or ancient technology, but it really was kind of like a basic armor plating on a building, basic uniforms for the cops. You know, they didn't have anything real secure. Nowadays when we see a futuristic cop, their head display inside their mask is their computer, not something on your wrist or anything like that. So it was interesting to kind of see it not so futuristic, but it was in the future.
It was like dirty future.
Yeah, but I think
it's
that
very cyberpunk.
It fits the theme of what this movie is, and the idea that it is a dirty world. It's a world that's been messed up.
It's very right after the apocalypse, but not into the future.
Yeah,
it's like, well, we recovered. This is what we can do for now.
Yeah.
We're gonna get there, but. We're surviving for now.
We gotta cram 800 million people into this one mega city. Here's how we're gonna do it. And it was cool, it was a city in a building. And they really did go through a whole city in a building.
Being in Detroit, RoboCop much?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I could see some RoboCop there. But it was, again, the tech was different, I think. I think that when you think RoboCop, you think futuristic Omnicore. You don't see this just old school. Basically, I was thinking more Die Hard, a little bit, like a futuristic Die Hard. John McClane survives to be in Judge Dredd. This is him,
Right. And also had a lot of touches to a Training Day.
Yeah, definitely. That's another good person. I was surprised by the youthfulness of Anderson. I didn't think that was going to play very well, but it played out actually really well, considering she's a rookie judge. She's just out on her first mission. That was kind of cool. And it didn't get stupid by the fact that she's on her first mission and obviously in over her head.
Right.
They played that off very well, and they brought her in and still let her be a rookie, while still facing, you know, something a rookie
which
wouldn't
really... Which makes you wonder what their training is about. Almost kind of like Starship Trooper type training.
Yeah. And it leaves an opportunity, I think, to show, you know, in what we saw in Judge Dredd, where they were at the academy showing rookies training. In this one, they don't show much of that at all. So there could go sequel, we could go prequel with movies like this. There's a lot more of a story they can tell with this cast of characters.
Well, there you have it. That's our initial impression. We'll get more into it when we step out of the theater and get everybody else's opinion.
Hi, this is Brandi Offset of BrandiOffset.com, and every week I listen to Forbidden Panel's Panelcast because AJ and Brian are the coolest dudes that I know, and because I like to hear my advertising in between the Panelcast.
So what did everyone think?
Yay!
Good movie.
Hey,
at least he didn't take off his helmet.
Yeah. That was funny.
He put it on. We didn't take it off.
He had hair.
At least he's not like Batman and can keep his mouth shut.
So,
now, before the movie we went in, you and I were talking, and you thought that Carl Urban was overacting.
Had to overact to get past the mask, yeah.
What did you think?
I think he did that.
You still think he did that?
Yeah. Because he had to focus on his facial expressions in his jaw.
Yeah, you did have to focus a lot on his mouth.
He had to, and his voice and everything. He had to act past the mask.
Yeah, after for a little while, the mouth.
I know, so I'm like, come on,
fucker. He had a Stallone mouth. They had a sneer at all times.
Yeah, his angry mouth looked like he was going to cry, so it's kind of confused. Yeah,
I have an angry mouth. I was kind of like, Colonel Kristen Stewart. For a little while, please, it's not that
easy. No remote. What do you think? Do you think he had to act out of it?
I don't think his voice was overacting. I do think his facial expressions were overdone. There was the scene towards the end, the wait, and it looked like he was going to cry when he did that. And it was kind of, okay, you're over pushing it there. But voice-wise, I thought the way he talked and the way he delivered a lot of his lines was perfect. I mean, sometimes it made you laugh, but other times it was right. I'm the law, you know, like it was played out right. In my mind, it sounded right. That's how I wanted Dredd to sound.
Better than Christian Bale's Batman?
Yes. Definitely better than Christian Bale's Batman.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, what do you say? In the magazines, not the comics, but the old British magazines, there was a lot of mouth expression in Dredd. He was always sneering, always showing his teeth.
Well, he also had, like, the Superman chin going, too.
True. But it was a lot of mouth expression because there was never anything beyond the helmet. So he was always showing his teeth. Like, anytime he was pissed, he was, like, constantly grinning at his teeth. So it's just kind of the way the character is.
Now, what do you want to think about the costumes and the effects?
I think they stole my idea. They were wearing rash guards.
So why is the future always so dirty? It's like a club scene. Yeah, and everyone's just poor and angry. I don't understand.
Think about what's going to happen here after the election. Yeah.
Is it any different than it is now?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like a little worse. I don't know. And
everybody's
like
poor and angry.
Yeah, and there's like a crazy bass going on.
What did you guys think of the helmet? The helmet at first in the beginning started to throw me off, but as the movie was going through, it started to fit a little bit better. Like, it was very Magneto.
It felt like he was wearing like different helmets.
I was expecting to see Martin Short. Very dark helmet.
Yeah.
It was a little too round.
But that's why I think he was wearing different helmets, because there were some scenes where it was bigger, and then other scenes where like it was form-fitting. And when I saw the bigger ones, I was like, oh, that's like a stick shift.
In the beginning, it was big. I don't know. Maybe that was the motorcycle version.
it seemed like it didn't... It stuck out in the beginning, but as the movie was progressing, as you've seen him moving through the halls quickly, or there was some obscurity, you know, there was a lot of those shots overhead with the security cameras and stuff. It looked correct. It looked like a fit. It was but in the beginning, it just seemed
it
big.
Would make sense
it seemed
to look
oversized.
Like a motorcycle, like it puffed out.
Right.
What about the effects?
It was
the slow-mo effects and everything.
I thought it was really colorful. It looked really good. It was filmed really well.
I like the way they made it look graphic without being overly done. It's really easy to go over that. But there was like just enough touches of just a little bit of an off color, too bright for reality, enough to show that it's supposed to be like meshing the two mediums a little bit and a little more elegant way than a lot of people, like a lot of
it wasn't like
it.
Quentin Tarantino style bleeding,
yeah.
You know, they
yeah.
go through and they cut everybody and they show
yeah,
it's
yeah.
splattering things like they actually show
yeah, but it was very Paul Verhoeven RoboCop
rushing, like
Total Recall hit explosion type
right.
shots
yeah.
yes
but it showed it in a way that didn't look like they were just trying to make you throw up, even though, you know, a lot of those scenes were extremely graphic, a lot of those images were extremely graphic. It wasn't necessarily we're out to make you cringe by the amount of blood that splatters.
I don't know.
And not to make you laugh by the amount of blood that splatters. Because that's what I always tend to do in those movies. When you see a lot of the slicing and dicing and a lot of the blood splatter, it makes you laugh. When you see somebody fall 200 stories and smash flat on the floor and then look flat when they show the body, that's pretty legit. And that it looked realistic, so to speak.
I mean, I like the combination of practical effects and CG, and not just going purely CG, especially since it was filmed in 3D, which is primarily CG. But, like, at least, like, practical blood, like, adds to the CG. CG blood's so cheesy, no matter how minimal it's used, it really looks horrible.
Not about that, about the gore and the violence and everything. Do you think it was too much, or?
No.
Realistic?
It carried with the story.
I needed more. Like, they only spent, what,
you needed more blood?
On the mama character, I wasn't afraid of her. Like, they did it really quick. Okay, she's a proxy. Okay, she sounds like, whoop-de-doo. Like, I want to see what she does. Like, how crazy is she? And then it was just, her character got cut short. So I think I could have used a little more.
They did tell a story of
like
biting her cock off. So.
No, but I mean, it was so little. She like breathed like drips of blood.
Did
that's
you
not
want
realistic.
To
no, I wanted
you
to like,
want
have some like animalistic like look. She was just kind of like there.
Or
like,
show her
up.
Skinning. Like they talked about her skinning somebody before
yeah.
they threw him over the balcony.
Well,
they didn't really show much
yeah,
of it.
Well,
they and now
when Anderson invaded the guy's mind, like you see like the little bit of
that scene was awesome. I like that scene.
Yeah, how they.
Well, I think they just didn't want to go too overboard.
Right. I think there's an extended edition or an unrated cut where we would see more of the violence that they had to cut out here to get it in the theaters.
I think
showing a lot of that would push that line.
I think this would go back to the mass market thing of you got to throw a filler out there to see if there's a market to make a second one.
Oh yeah.
Like this
yeah.
this would be Dread Zero. If it makes money, there will be another one, which will be more extended, more into it. Like this is just.
Now, any comparisons to The Raid Redemption? Anybody see that?
Yeah,
I saw that. It was kind of like that.
We were missing a lot of the martial arts and Asian people climbing over balconies and under balconies, but the rest of it was pretty much the exact same thing as Raid Redemption.
Yeah. People just coming up on the balcony just shooting down is pretty much what
honestly,
it was.
That was probably the part that was most disappointing to me, is that there was all shooting and there's not really any hand-to-hand action that was really going on.
Well, Dread isn't really.
Dread never
yeah.
does
hand-to-hand.
Yeah, that's one of the things, right?
Yeah,
they
all guns.
They don't do hand-to-hand combat
in
the
magazine.
It's always
never
been shooting.
Hand-to-hand.
Yeah.
And it was the idea that...
So in that matter, like, it's
right. But then they showed Anderson in a hand-to-hand combat situation at the end there, which was kind of cool. She's not Dread. There's Dread. There's Anderson.
Well, that also lies with the point, don't lose your gun.
Right.
Like, because, I mean, they're obviously trained to not have the gun, but, you know, don't lose it because you don't want to get to that point.
I mean, Dread had that little bit of the hand-to-hand with the other judge, but, I mean, still had his gun in his hand and still used it.
Yeah.
Right. But I think with her character, it was kind of showing where she snapped. Because she was, like, pretty soft until that point. And then she gets out, and then she's just, like, going nuts.
Right.
So I think she needed to do...
the point where, you know, things get real, it's
she
the fight or flight.
Hand
and
hand.
Right.
You,
yeah.
you have no place to, you know,
exactly.
flight to.
I think the story, and
the way it's filmed is truer to the magazines than it is to the comics. Because the comics are more campy, like...
The comics were way colorful, and,
yeah.
and the magazine was way
right,
dirty.
Right, way grittier,
yeah.
way dirtier, way, like... So, I like that, because I like the magazine Dread.
Would you see a sequel?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I would. I'd bring my badge the next time.
And I can say, as someone who's never seen a magazine, never read any of the comics, the story interests me. The way that they built the world and showed it in the movie was enough to make me want to go and look those things up.
I agree.
Because now I'm interested. Now I'm like, okay, that's a really cool premise. It was presented in a way that, you know, the time went by. I didn't even realize how long the movie was going until it was over. And it's like, oh, well, it's over. What happens next?
Right.
Show me.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that they didn't show a lot of the city, like
right.
a lot of action going on in the city. And the motorcycles felt like they'd be really uncomfortable to ride.
Because
they were like this.
I think they were just poorly developed. But
yeah.
that, I think, once again, they were so minimally put on the screen that I don't think they wanted to overdo it.
So they can change it, too,
if there's
more.
And it might also be like a budget-cutting thing. Like,
sure.
let's film it in a building. We can all have these sets. And
yeah. And as far as it being similar to the Raid Redemption, really, like, when you're going through a multi-story complex,
What else is there to do? Like, they're going to shoot from above.
Ignore the comic book that I write.
it's just,
I mean, really practically, there's nothing else really you can do.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, people steal from other people all the time. That's the nature of the business.
Now, was it worth 3D?
Yes, I think so. You could tell it was filmed in 3D because at no point did you have that grainy.
No, there was a couple.
No, there was grainy, but the grainy still played through the 3D, which was interesting. They had the scenes where he's going through the hallway, especially the darker hallways when he's on his own, and he'd come around the corner and you would see the graininess, but the definition was still there for the 3D. It was interesting. I've never seen it done like that before. We always get those weird blurry scenes where we're like,
a lot of films like that that are put out in 3D aren't filmed on 3D cameras. Mm-hmm. Very few are, and they're still trying to. It's a weird. Like, a lot of them still look kind of weird to me. A lot of things that are filmed on 3D, because it's digital video and it looks like it's filmed with the freaking handy cam.
Yeah, those fake.
Yeah. But this one felt like it almost felt like film. It had a film look to it, which I'm glad they're trying to get to.
This is probably one of the first movies I've seen in 3D that actually, you know, I didn't mind watching in 3D.
Yeah, I kept noticing that I was wearing the glasses after like 5-10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't really bother me.
I usually hate 3D, and I loved it in this one.
And I still had the same, like, issue where, you know, 3D glasses or sunglasses are tinted.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as bright as I would have liked it to be, but otherwise, like, you know, I still enjoyed
it. That's the other thing too. You didn't get those cheesy 3D effects where they're purposely like it.
Resident Evil.
Oh my God.
Let's talk about that movie. Let's talk about those.
Were there intentionally doing stuff at, you know, to make it 3D? It was more subtle, so it just made it more seem more panoramic.
So perhaps the gun should have been firing at your face then.
No, I prefer it. To me, for it not being cheesy, it looks so much better for it.
The one of the few times where 3D meant like a higher definition than 1080p.
Exactly.
You know, so.
What about the sound? Not the music. The sound.
Oh, the sound was hard hitting, dude. Every
you
time
you were walking through and you would hear every single step and you would feel every single step.
I mean, the way that they were doing it through the theater, I was like, okay, either that's really, really cool or someone's walking on the roof right now.
Yeah, it was.
Or James is shaking his leg.
Yeah,
it was vibrating the chair.
It had really good separation. Like, and it felt like you could feel it go around. Mm-hmm.
And,
it totally made me feel like I was in a combat zone. Like, you know, back in high school, I'm playing Counter-Strike, and I'm listening to every movement, making sure I know exactly where my target's at. It put me right back into that zone again.
Like you're gaming with Turtle Beach headphones and stuff.
Yeah, right.
Look at that. I made Richard smile. Uh-oh.
Yeah, there was a lot of work put into that sound in addition to music, which had to also intertwine with that.
Intentional. I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but the house lights would come up at periodic points where the movie was actually getting brighter, like the hallways that were better lit, the house lights were coming on.
Yeah, and it was annoying.
Yeah.
No,
especially at the end, when all of a sudden they started coming up,
it was distracting. Like, I'm all, why are the lights? Oh, what's going on in the movie? Like, it was, you know,
lights going on and off and changing were really annoying. You want the. You don't want theater distraction.
Right.
I didn't notice.
I didn't notice it at all.
I didn't notice it until the end, when it was much more apparent.
You know, then again, I had James sitting right next to me. I didn't notice him laughing. When you can't notice that, I just see to have tunnel vision.
So overall, everyone was happy with it?
Yeah, I loved it.
Cool. So, that ends episode 103. We'll catch you guys at the next movie.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.